redundant. The Marmacomas are probably a clue.
That agenda. And if we have some time left over tomorrow, we'll probably try to maybe say a few words about Rosh Hashanah, about Parshat Avinu. So we'll see what we can squeeze into tomorrow's brief agenda. But so we'll try to accomplish as much as we can on these topics. So the topic of Tosafot Shabbos we selected for this zone because it is a Shabbos-related topic and impact on a lot of halachas issues and other related issues. But also, as you may have seen, depending on how far in Marmokomos you've gotten, it has unique relationships to almost every Yontif. That essentially, you say that Tosefta Shabbos and Yontif is a concept that's relevant to every Yontif in the exact same way, with the exception of Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, the first day of Sukkot Shmini Atzeres, the first day of Pesach, Shavuos, and Tisha B'Av. Every day of the Jewish calendar essentially has a unique interaction with this din. So being that we have four of those coming up in the next few weeks, maybe an appropriate time to talk about this a little bit. So as we know, there is a concept, there is a halacha, of adding on to Shabbos and Yom Tov. And while the Gemara has a number of possible limudim that point us in this direction, seems to be that the dominant one appears in the Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah on Daf Tes, where the Gemara notes that there's something seems to be a little bit off about the Torah's date. Right? The Torah tells us in reference to fasting on Yom Kippur that Yom Kippur should be a fast taking place on the 9th. And that's a major issue because, as far as we know, Yom Kippur is the 10th. And this is not something we want to get wrong. This is definitely a day we have to nail down precisely. So the fact that the Torah is giving us apparently mixed impressions on when Yom Kippur is the source of some concern. It's also interesting, and the Rush talks about this a little bit, the fact that the Torah in different places uses this pasuk for different halachos. The Torah in the first part of the Brachos uses this pasuk to tell us a different din. What that din? Now, what is obligated to eat and drink on Erev Yom Kippur? See if we can possibly squeeze that in a little bit next week in the context of other Yom Tov topics. But there is a halacha, which we assume to be also a din minat Torah, that there's a requirement specifically to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And the Gemara says the language of Inui by the 9th of Tishrei is telling us that kala ochel b'shosa b'tisha malu makosu yu isana tisha basu. Whoever eats and drinks on the 9th is credited, so to speak, as if he fasted both days. Opening up a whole host of questions. Who says we need to be credited with fasting both days? Is that what the pasuk is telling us? What's the whole mila? Lots to talk about that. It's not officially our topic now, but it's worth being aware of. The Rosh in the 8th Parak of Yuma talks about both of those. Rosh is coming from the same pasuk. And potentially they could be in conflict with each other. Questions on the Avodah talk about. For example, somebody might have forgotten to eat an Erev Yom Kippur until right before Yom Kippur starts, and then he's going to have a clash between starting Yom Kippur early and eating on Erev Yom Kippur. So there's a whole discussion which one of these dinim is the stronger dinim. Right from the same process, we're sure about this in the Matzah of Rav. I mentioned his name earlier, Rav Steinberg. It's also true about this in the Ksav Sofer. It's a different perspective. The whole discussion, the two different dinim derive from this pasuk, which is stronger, which would outweigh the other in terms of a clash. But as far as we're concerned today, the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah that the fact that the Torah says fast on the 9th is a lesson to us. That this is the notion of Tosefes. We'll call it Rav Tosefes Kiddusha, which most of the Rishonim understand is a source for Tosefes Shabbos and Yom Kippur. the notion that every Shabbos and Yantif has a chiyuv in our Torah that we should be most of Michal HaKodesh. We should take a little bit from the weekday, borrow, so to speak, from the day before, and stick it onto the Kodesh, and annex it to the Kodesh. So now when the Torah says we're fasting on the ninth, it's literally true, because the fast starts when it's still the ninth day of Tishrei. So that's the view of both Rishonim. This is a din that's applicable to all of these days of Kedusha throughout the year, Shabbos and Yom Tov. And that's a din minhag Torah. There is at least one, a little bit more than one, prominent exception to this understanding. Who's perhaps the most prominent exception? The Rambam. Right? The Rambam, when he records this din, so he has it in a minimalist formulation. That he applies it only to what the pasuk is specifically talking about. Right? What's the pasuk specifically talking about? Right, so Yom Kippur, and not even everything about Yom Kippur, but you could, let's say, broadly speaking, divide Yom Kippur into two halves, and say that Yom Kippur is a day of Isser Malacha and a day of Inui. So the Rambam only records one of them as being relevant to this day, as Rambam said, the day of Inui. Which, again, is what the Pasuk says. Since all the other Rishonim assume that we extrapolate from the Pasuk to beyond that, and the Rambam essentially is a minimalist reading of the Pasuk, restricting it only to what the Pasuk actually says, the reference to Inisa. So just about Yom Kippur, and not even everything about Yom Kippur. The tour is maybe somewhere in the middle, because the tour brings it by Yom Kippur specifically, but by Yom Kippur, everything about Yom Kippur. So then that opens up the question, which the later start to talk about, does the Rambam acknowledge Tosefta Shabbos on a level with Rabbanim? Is that what he's saying? He's saying that he doesn't think that Shabbos of Yom Tovim are included in this din in our Torah, but are included with Rabbanim, the way the Magen Mishnah sounds like, if the Magen Mishnah emphasizes our Torah in interpreting the Rambam's words? Or should we say, as some of the notes that came in touch with the Knesset Mishnah point out, of the Shabbos, that essentially the Rambam doesn't talk about it. And so the Rambam doesn't talk about Tosefta Shabbos, so we don't know that he even holds the middle level of the Rambam. So that itself is a discussion that Shachachma gets involved in, the Biragra gets involved in, the whole discussion we have thrown in, some assuming that the Rambam at least acknowledges the Tosefta's in the Rambam, and others saying at the end of the day, or in this case at the beginning of the day, the Rambam doesn't really talk about it. He just talks about Tosefta's in Kippur, and Tosefta's in Inui in Kippur, so we don't really have the grounds to say that he holds Tosefta's on any level. That's a lot more to discuss about that, just in terms of laying out our positions here. So we have, again, Rov Rishonim, it's a deraisa by everything. The Rambam, it's a deraisa by Inui and Kippur. The Tur, it's a deraisa by everything in Kippur. Is there a concept of Tosefta in the Rabbanan? So we don't know from the Rambam. Many thought yes, many weren't convinced. And there's also the view of Rabbeinu Tam, who wrote the Ruach, the Hilchos Erev Shabbos, is in the Mitzvah, quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, who also holds this Rabbanan Kippur. So that's our range of views. So we'll have to come back a little bit to discuss the Rambam more, but for the most part, and most of what we'll be discussing, we'll work off this assumption that it's essentially a Dibbana Torah. Sammy? Okay. But for our purposes, we bring Shabbos early is a drama. Okay. So right off the bat, we'll come back to some of those issues, perhaps of what the Rambam's getting at, and maybe some of the practical issues. But just to try to have a framework to understand what exactly is going on here. So there is something already inherently a little bit surprising in the whole idea of Tosefta. So I was discussing this with Yehuda before, that if the Ratzon HaTorah is that Shabbos should start at an earlier time than it does, so then Kadosh Baruch Hu could have made it start at an earlier time. I was discussing with this a little bit. We have a concept in a different area of Halacha. We're talking about the Tzidin Mishuris Hadin. And there are some Rishon Behold that it's Achiyu to go with the Mishuris Hadin. It's a difficult concept. That means going beyond the law is obligatory, so what's the law? So what's the point of deciding the law at a different point if the Achiyu can do more than that? So how can you say that the law is you have to go beyond the law? That's a whole separate discussion, which not necessarily we can get into now. There are marshals, so here, the idea that Kadosh Baruch Hu in the Torah wants us to start traveling at an earlier time, but it actually starts, is itself a subject of interest. Why is it that Shabbos doesn't start early? So that's part and parcel of the question, what exactly is it that we're accomplishing? And this is a question that a lot of the Achronim raised. Hi.
It's not just like adding more time, but it's like a hachana for your actual fast.
How's it a hachana?
Because you're reading so that you'll be able to fast.
You're talking about the other drasha from the pasuk, right, which the self pasuk said. In terms of the sort of two separate drashas from the pasuk, one is that we start to fast early, and then this other bit is that we've done that day. So if eating on that day is considered a hachana, as many saw it. So now Tosefta's eating would mean starting the earlier. You'd starting the fasting earlier. If they overlap because they're both in the same pasuk, and because then the Gemara says that eating somehow grafts itself onto the eating, which is an interesting discussion. Again, maybe if we have some time before the Kippur, especially since we're talking about this half of the equation, maybe we'll try to make some time before the Kippur to fill in the other half of the equation. But whether it's a hachana to fast or not is part of the whole discussion, which we'll see if we have time to get into. But in terms of Shabbos, at least, so this idea that we're told to start early, especially if it's Midnight Torah, is a striking idea. So perhaps this correlates to the first question you could ask, which is the question that Dr. Oren talked about all over. What exactly does the phrase Tosefta Shabbos mean? What exactly is happening? Let's try to keep things as simple as possible. Right? So let's pretend Shabbos starts at 6. What does that mean, Shabbos starts at 6? I don't know, let's say it's Shvi'a at 6. And there's a lot of complexity in terms of figuring out when Shabbos begins. You get into the whole Beit HaShemashos question, the whole Beit HaKam, and the other question. So for our purposes, let's try to keep all of that out of the discussion. Let's say that Shabbos starts at 6. It's a 6-to-6 day, meaning that's when Shabbos starts. So let's say that Pag HaMinchah is on such a day, will be 4:45. So you have some time between 4:45 and 6 to bring in Shabbos. So you decide to bring in Shabbos at 5:30 instead of 6. So what happened at 5:30? Is it actually Shabbos now? Did you actually bring in Shabbos when it was otherwise chol? Which has been past Chiddush. Because the idea that we have any influence on when Shabbos starts is a radical concept. You could say the opposite, contrasting the Yom
Tov. It's not actually the whole nature of Shabbos, that Yom Tov is going
to
be
right. Right, that's what I was about to say. Right, that one well taken, that we talk about when they Kiddush. The Gemara says that we make Kiddush, we say, V'kadish Yisrael Ba'azmanet. And when we say Shabbos, we make Kiddush for Shabbos, we say V'kadish Shabbos. Because of the difference that the Kaddish Yisrael Azman and the Jews have a role in influencing when Yom Tov will be, because they set the calendar, so they can control to some degree when Yom Tov is going to pull out. So we have some impact on when Yom Kippur is. But we have zero impact on when Shabbos is. Every 7 days, it's going to be Shabbos no matter what. So it's a big Kaddish to say we have any role in extending Shabbos. Part of the program, turn Friday night into Shabbos. So if we turn Friday afternoon into Shabbos, that's the condition of the Kiddush. So there are some who posited that that's what's going on. And there are others who said, no, it can't be. It can't be that we have that cost. That's beyond us. So therefore, when we start Shabbos at 5:30, that's the Melitza. We're not really starting Shabbos. Tosefta Shabbos doesn't really exist in that sense of the word. What Tosefta Shabbos means is that we will act as if it's Shabbos. So relevant for us, we will abstain from Melacha during that time. We will essentially pretend to have Shabbos. But Shabbos is not going to start until 6 o'clock. And that's supported by the fact that the Gemara says that the ocean for Shabbos, the movement of Shabbos, or Yom Kippur, are only applicable during Etzem, during the day itself. And if I did Melacha in the time of Tosefta Shabbos, or if I ate during the time of Tosefta Yom Kippurim, I'm not subject to the relevant ocean of Shabbos and Kippur. Is that right?
On Shabbos, or it was on Friday.
Okay.
Where you have this second opinion where it's not really Shabbos, we're just acting like it's Shabbos. We have to say Yalav Yabo.
That may be an Nav Kamina we'll discuss, although that's less consequential than some of the other Nav Kaminas, as we'll see. There are actually many Nav Kaminas we'll try to talk about a little bit. That's a popular Shiloh because it also comes up in Rosh Chodesh on Sunday. And that comes up more frequently in that context. But we'll talk about that a little bit towards the end. We'll just have a sacharisa of that. But as we'll see, there are many, many possible ramifications in this question. So roughly speaking, and there are nuances in this which we'll try to talk about as well, but roughly speaking, let's assume we have those two possibilities. That either you're actually making a day into Shabbos, or can't do that. We'll call the first school the ambitious school. Those who believe we actually have the ability to create Shabbos out of nothing, good call. Or, on the other hand, we'll call it the pragmatic school. Discuss why that would be. So, if you want to say that you actually have the ability to make Kedusha Shabbos, so then I think we can understand perhaps why we have such a structure. What the comma of the mitzvah is, why do we have this mitzvah, and why is it that God didn't just make Shabbos start earlier? Anyone want to take a stab at formulating that?
Say it again.
If we believe that you actually do create traditional Shabbos, and so then, if we're willing to accept that such a thing as possible, then maybe we can understand what the comma of the mitzvah is, what the reason for the mitzvah is, and maybe also why Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't just set Shabbos at an earlier time.
Jonathan? Maybe you can sort of upset the question. Maybe you say that God did say it and set a darshan apostle.
Mm-hmm. And then that's essentially...
God did say it.
So the whole concept of Tosefos is really a misnomer. Really, it just means we made a mistake about when Shabbos starts. It starts earlier.
So darshan from Dasiri connected over there. Maybe.
Okay, but it's also... And we have to have a more set time instead of having the flexibility of when to pick the time. It's a little harder to say like that. Donnie?
You see that we're supposed to take an active role in creating Shabbos.
It seems to be a Kedusha issue, right? That we're supposed to take an active role in that, like you're saying. That in terms of Tom Ambitz, I think we can understand that we're looking to embrace Kedusha ourselves, not just to have the Tom that hit us on the nose when it shows up. You probably heard the imagery painted of the Arab Shabbos Eid, the very glorious picture of somebody who would sit on Friday afternoon already, significantly before Shabbos, looking to accept the Kedusha, not just have them jump out of the shower 5 seconds before because clock is really hitting Shabbos time. I mean, we're often in that position because we have to be, but the fact is there is a certain beauty to being able to bring in Shabbos willingly, looking to actively bring it in and not have it happen to you. So, if you're creating Kedusha where it wasn't there before, so we can see why that would be a mitzvah. We can see, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to be a partner in the experience and to bestow our own Kedusha, not just respond to Kedusha that's there. Act.
We would add our own
plans
to other mitzvahs that
would
be
Well, it depends what year we have such an idea, we're makdish into the Beis HaMikdash, and we do bring Kedusha into a lot of areas of life, and sometimes we find even when it's a wedding kaddish, like for example, some bring this imagery, we have before, Right? So before it was considered to be Kaddish at birth, and yet there's still a mitzvah for us to not kosher. So sometimes people are not talking about extending the territory. There is such an idea of us specifically doing our own kedusha. But even beyond that, when we're adding territory, so to speak, there are areas where it doesn't be a positive value. So abstractly, I think we can see what the value is there. We want to embrace kedusha in such a way that we're not only responding to it, but we are adding to it. I think you're thinking of doing actions that are not mitzvahs and giving the mitzvah status, which is not what we're talking about. We're talking about taking the kedusha that's there and allowing more to be brought under its umbrella. So to bring in part of the day that wasn't there, making that holy as well. Even though it's also noteworthy, that's not infinite. No one says we're bringing the Shabbos through the night. And we've been in a certain framework where it's clear that it's connected to the kedusha of Shabbos. So to extend that kedusha seems to be a value which is not immediately obvious, but at least we can relate to it in something that makes sense.
Okay, I think you'll try to say something.
Someone is Michal Shabbos, so it's as if he's like marked all the Torah. Mm-hmm. So I thought the reason for that was because Shabbos is a testament to like God's creation of the world. So it seems right. Like it's completely God-oriented thing, like that we're not included. Is it that like now we're supposed to have like some sort of interaction and like aid in the creation of like I think the verse 12 mentions it, like now like man. So, like, there's two types of man, and one has to cultivate the world, so that has to do with that.
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of different themes that are being mixed in there. I think that those are all relevant ideas as well. But the notion that God's creation of the world is being testified to by Shabbos, I don't think that that means that we can't have any role in extending the Kedusha. I think potential specialists in Shabbos is going to be there anyway. But the idea that we have to respond to that, not only by observing it, but even maybe by extending its observance a little bit more and a little later, I don't think it necessarily does any damage to that idea. Jonathan, what do you want to say?
So I understand why that's nice and shkafically, but I don't really understand why that answers the real question. Why didn't it say so specifically in Torah?
Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us a role. So he could have just said, start Shabbos earlier, and then we wouldn't have had any human input. It would have just been, Shabbos would have started then. So he's giving us a role to say, okay, we'll add a few minutes, so it'll also be partially ours. Klausenberger Rebbe was a major poser, has many fascinating tshuvas. He also has a svarim of drush called Yitzhak Piskam. And one of his svarim, he talks about this idea about that it's especially dear to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the kedusha that we create ourselves. It's a hashgafic theme. So if that's what's going on, I think we could understand what the mitzvah is about. If, however, we take the view, which perhaps a little more feasible, that we don't really have the ability to make Kedusha. We can't actually turn a Friday afternoon into Shabbos. So then, if we're saying it's not Shabbos and we're essentially pretending, we're just abstaining from Malacha, but it's not Kedusha Shabbos at all. So then the question is, what are we accomplishing? Why would we do such a thing? Why do we need to pretend? Aren't we a little old to that? And what's the idea of pretending a Shabbos, Sammy? Sorry? So that's more within the first camp, because...
No, not to make meaning you're showing that you're doing it even though it's not really anything. You're showing that you're really...
And doesn't that disappoint the concept of Kol, though? Because you're obligated to actually do Malacha 6 days old, so you say, well, now I'm actually accepting this as not Kol, even though it's
right. I think it fits more within the first. So, for example, if I'm going to sit now and not do Malacha for half an hour, would you think there's any Kedusha to that, any significance to that?
No.
So, it's no, pretending that a Shabbos in a zone that's adjacent to Shabbos?
Yeah. Because otherwise, it's a little kasher between now and Shabbos.
Right, so that part clearly we need. But the question is the significance of simply not doing Malacha when it's not Kedusha Shabbos, that's automatically significant as a positive, especially since it's passive. Right, you know, you could throw into this idea, for example, the idea that the Avos kept Kol Torah Kula. So the Maharal, the Gaur Aryeh, has a famous comment that he assumes that they only followed positive mitzvahs. Because abstaining from a negative mitzvah doesn't really show anything. Doing a positive mitzvah, so that shows, okay, so that's something to volunteer. So it's difficult to say, if I'm going to sit and not do malacha for half an hour, that's an expression of affection for a mitzvah. I could have seen that more within the first camp.
I think nowadays, you see people want to be more connected to their world. They want to
on every single type of thing to connect them as much as they can so that they can work 24 hours a day. So I think that in this case...
If you turn off the BlackBerry, it's more of a...
That's a big thing.
Okay. Okay, I get it, but I still would have seen it more than the first game. Mike?
Could you say to the Saga right now?
Oh, so then that's another possibility. So let's just flesh out what Mike was saying. So an important source, I put it on the list, I don't know if you got a chance to see it, is the Medrash that has an interesting comment. The Medrash asks a question that is asked by Chazal a number of times. And even if you haven't seen this Medrash, you've probably seen the question before and heard different Terutzim and Chazal to the question. But this is a different answer.
We have time, maybe tomorrow is also Shabbat Shubatorah, you can say, based on this question as well. Maybe we'll see if we have some time to say it tomorrow. But the Medrash wants to know, why is it that the Torah seems to suggest, in Pesukim that we say in Kiddush, that God finished creating the world on the seventh day? Right? Isn't our general assumption that he created the world in 6 days and rested on the seventh? He didn't create anything on the Sabbath. So in one place, Chazal say that the world, this is Menucha. Menucha was an active creation. Another, again, voice you could say that related to Shabbat Shuvah, but we'll try to squeeze that in. But the Medrash that's relevant to us right now, that the Medrash says, and Bechel Abshli, there was a whole article on this one Medrash, is one of the relevant things. That the Medrash says that this is really referring to our procession. Not that any of us were around then, but if any of us were around during that first week of creation, it would have looked to us like God was creating on the seventh day. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who knows exactly when time is, gazillionth of a second, so he can keep doing halacha right up until a gazillionth of a second before Shabbos, and then stop doing malacha. And it would look to us, if we were around then, it would have looked like Chilul Shabbos. Because it would have looked like this malacha was happening on Shabbos itself. But a Kaddish Baruch Hu can do that because he can perceive at that microscopic level. But for us, who don't have a gazillimeters, and can't tell the difference between the gazillisecond before Shabbos and the gazillisecond after Shabbos, so says the Medrash, we have to be Moses Michalal HaKodesh. So it sounds like from that Medrash, that what's the purpose here? What are we trying to accomplish? Basically, again, right? It seems like we're worried that if we're going to say, okay, let's say, again, without getting into a bit of time with the Golden and all the Shakers, let's say I knew that Shabbos and Kabbalah we've seen on Shabbos starts at 6 o'clock today. But I don't know exactly what 6 o'clock is. So if I'm going to say I'll do malacha up until 5:59 and 59 seconds, and then I'll stop, it's almost a vaday I'm going to end up being makal shabbos.
Definitely works. Being you take this matter even without the idea of shabbos,
right. So then, starting from the beginning of banish mushrooms, I wanted to keep that whole issue out of it because it gets a little complicated. Already, the Gemara says that the time between shkia and seis is a suffix. By the way, if you want some time during the year, we can take some time out to talk about that sort of in general, the Bina Tama. Yeah, the Bina Tama, it's a very relevant issue, so we can try to find the time during the year to get into that as well. But that's already a suffix. So find one more clear to treat the time after Shkia like as if it's Shabbos, because maybe that might be Shabbos already. But let's, so then that means, okay, 6 o'clock is Shkia, we're calling 6 o'clock Shabbos. But that even then, once we accept it's basically a fee of the Raisa to start Shabbos at 6, but even when that 6 again 6 o'clock being Shkia, about when 6 o'clock is, chances are we'll mess that up. We don't know exactly when that moment of 6 o'clock is. We don't have perfect watches and perfect awareness of time that's going to prevent us from blurring that line. So we'll think it's 5:59, and it's really 6:01.
The first problem you have that, you know, there's a pasuk, and it says for 7 Shabbos. The second example is the fact that the Yom Shabbos is a time point of certain, you don't know the Shabbos.
Right.
So the difference is that, let's say in theory we didn't know exactly, let's say we didn't know that the time of Yom Shabbos was Shabbos.
Right.
And if it's not Shabbos, then you're actually adding on to Shabbos. But if it's not, if you're not, if the finished process actually is the next day, you're not adding on to anything.
You're saying, so it plugs into the whole question of whether you're actually starting the day or not. That's
right.
Part of how you, it's interesting.
It's, yeah. Still, it's down to, well, you might actually not be adding anything. You might just be starting at the regular time.
Right, you're saying that if Shabbos had started, the finished process already, so you're kind of adding to the outside already from before. You know, what are you adding on to? You're adding on to some time that's already before Shabbos.
Right.
That's interesting.
So then it goes down to the purpose of Shabbos because, you know, you don't know when Shabbos actually starts, which then it might not even be set at Shabbos.
Right. That's
or is there an intrinsic value to starting Shabbos earlier?
Right. So that's an interesting question itself. So let's see if we can ever get into the Banish Mushroom's question, how that factor hits me. John goes up, and then Mike has another flesh out your point from before.
According to this opinion that I just get, and that would explain why we would stop from, let's say, Malacha earlier. What about the fact that we're doubting earlier and we can do it on Sasa?
Right. So that's, so part of that has been explained, part of that premise may or may not be true. So that's what we'll have to see. So you want to flesh out your thing?
I was just
going to
ask about the door right before.
Yes, okay, so we'll get to that. So it sounds like from that measure that this is essentially a gezer, right? This is essentially a siag, so to speak, or a positive siag. That we're concerned that we're going to be Muslim on Shabbos, so we're mechuyev to create a buffer zone. We should not go right up against the border, but we have to create some type of interruption. Now, if we hold like the Rambam, and if the Rambam holds like those who've been, then he says, Tosefis is the Rabbana, so then that's all very well and good. Right, that makes a lot of sense because this fits in very neatly with our perception of Dinam Drabbanan. That Dinam Drabbanan are there very often to create this buffer zone, so to speak, to protect us from possibly violating the Torah law. So it makes sense, it fits very neatly into the whole process. Min HaTorah, Shabbos starts at 6, and the Drabbanan, the rabbis tell us to create a buffer zone so we shouldn't come to violate the Isser Doreis. However, as Mike is alluding to, but what about the majority of Rishonim who hold that it's a given HaTorah? So you could say, well, maybe that's the Machlokas, the Rambam, and everybody else. The Rambam holds it's the Rabbanan because he holds it's the Siyad. Again, assuming he thinks that. And everyone else would have to say a different Pshat. And if you want to really force it to say, we say the Rambam holds the Siyad, everyone else holds its actual condition. But things don't play out at all that neatly. And even in terms of the siyag, there is a strong possibility that you can have such a concept, which I think is what Mike and Ray said before, of the siyag min HaTorah. Now, this is a theme that's going to come up a lot. We'll talk about it next week as well, and in the context of the different sugya. And there is such a possibility that there are dinim min HaTorah that are there as protective measures against other problems. We generally assume we have this dichotomy that Dimin HaTorah is a kind of objective and Dimin Drabbanan is to protect this objective reality. But maybe that's not exactly how we want to know. And maybe there are Dimin HaTorah that are there to protect other Dimin HaTorah. And this is a topic that was most publicized by the great Yosef Engel. His name we've mentioned already in the past. Yosef Engel has a classic essay about this, very worth reading, available on HebrewBooks.org and elsewhere. So the Yosef Engel has many fascinating svarim. One of his svarim is called Lekach Tov, not to be confused with Lekach Tov and Chumash, a modern sefer. But Lekach Tov is a collection of essays, and he has some traditional yeshivish Torahs, but he also has some more philosophically oriented pieces where he kind of asks a broad question and then brings proof. He was a tremendous body, so he could bring all kinds of proofs from everywhere to whatever issue he was trying to figure out. So one of the topics he deals with in Kol Ches, in Sefer Lekach Tov, in the eighth essay, the piece is called Imatzinu Siag Min HaTorah. Do you ever find a case where there's a din min HaTorah, but that din is really there as a siag, it's there as a protective measure against something else. He says, yeah, let me think about it for a minute, and he thinks about it for a minute, he comes up like something he made in a minute. Happens to be, there's another sefer, the Yad Sofer, was written by Rav Moshe Sofer, not the Chassam Sofer, but the descendant of the Chassam Sofer, named Rav Moshe Sofer. So he independently has a tshuva, where he also takes on the same task, and he has his own list. And then that wasn't finished, I think it's an
unfinished tshuva and sefer.
So their haharos in the bottom of that sefer from his grandson,
where he tries to fill in what he thinks is missing from the list. So there's some overlaps with your Spangler's list, and there's some things that don't overlap. You take all the lists together, you can come up with about 35 examples of dinim and haTorah that seem to be a siyach, although all of them are, according to one view of Rishon here, one view of Rishon here, none of them are overt slam dunks. But he takes statements of Rishon interpreting different dinim in the Torah as a siyach. Perhaps the most famous, if you were here in Yeshiva last year and you learned Pesachim, so the Ran, at the beginning of Pesachim, says that the Yisr of Vayira, Vayimatze, the Yisr of only Chametz and Pesach, which is for sure a dinim in haTorah. But the Ran says, really, the Ratz in haTorah is not about us not owning the Chametz, it's about us not eating the Chametz. But because it's so likely, 51 weeks out of the year, we eat Chametz, if we leave it in our house, the chances that we'll eat it are very, very high, and it's Yisr Kares. So therefore, the Torah made a siyag and said, don't own chametz, so you should come to eat it. That's perhaps the most well-known example. There are many other examples. So Rav Yosef Engel, on his list, he quotes this medrash. And one of the examples he lists is this medrash. You see from here that Tosafot Shabbos, according to most Rishonim, is a din in haTorah. And yet, according to this medrash, it seems to be a siyag. So like that, just when you turned it up, so it sounds like it's a siyag ben haTorah. Now, you can also discuss a little bit different formulation. So does a siyag usually mean an issur? And is Tosefta Shabbos perceived as a mitzvah sase or a mitzvah lo sase? Is it basically an issur not to do malacha during this time? Or is it a positive mitzvah to start Shabbos? Which may itself depend on whether it's a siyag or not. So whether or not it's the example of other siyagin is something you can try to figure out. It relates, by the way, again, we'll see if we have time to talk about this more, but there are Rishonim who say, Alan was saying before, that maybe eating on Erev Yom Kippur is a hachana for Yom Kippur itself. So the Ritva has an expression in Rosh Hashanah. He says that the idea of eating on Erev Yom Kippur is shlo yavo lidei dechias inuim. Now you shouldn't come to a situation where you're not able to fast. If you happen to not get around to eating on the 9th of Tishrei, and then on the 10th of Tishrei, everyone else is fasting out, starving, having a whole day, it's now about to faint, so I have to eat. So great, if you had thought about it beforehand, you wouldn't have been in this situation. So one could perhaps formulate that as essentially a siyag ben haTorah, so to speak, although that's more clearly a positive action. So does that fit in the whole framework of the siyag? If you ever have a siyag and you're told to do something positively so that you don't violate an issur or you don't have to compromise an issur in this case, it's a fair question to ask. But that seems to essentially be our framework here so far. And then either we could say that we actually are bringing Yantif in early, what we'll call the ambitious school, the idea that you have that possibility of very ambitious notion, and you fully bring in Kedusha Shabbos. Or do we say that, no, you can't really do that? And we'll call the school the pragmatic school. They're bringing Shabbos in early just as a matter of procedure. Just so you don't violate Shabbos, but there's no Kedusha going on. It's not just an afternoon for how holy you should feel. And that's important afternoon too.
But we'll see, perhaps, other afternoons that could emerge from this issue.
Just mentioned, and I wrote about this somewhere once, and Rabbi Simon Shita wrote a saga where he says he's very uncomfortable with this idea that you can actually extend Kedusha Shabbos, even though, as we'll see, there are big league achronim such as the Taz who do seem to say this, says it can't mean that. It can't mean that you can actually extend Kedusha Shabbos. He thinks the fact that there's no onus during that time, it's already a riot that it's not actual Kedusha Shabbos or Kedusha Yantif.
And you have to say that if you are granted some Kedusha, it's a weaker form of Kedusha that is adjacent to Shabbos, but it's not an actual extension of Shabbos. So he would see the two schools of thought as the first school being you bestow some type of lower Kedusha in that time, while the second school of thought is that there's no kedusha whatsoever. It's merely an extension from Allah.
Aye.
Opponents say that there's a motion for the...
Sorry?
Opponents say that you're over McLaughlin during that discussion?
No one said that you're higher. No, you're not allowed to do it. It's a prohibition to do it. That's essentially what it boils down to. But you're not higher than one. That's essentially
the law. Why? That's
the point. You are, the motion are restricted to the excellence of the data.
Besides from the comments, no one assumes that you're starting Shabbos early, or perhaps it's that sort of time. No one assumes you start Shabbos early, you're starting instead. You're just extending the Kedusha of that.
So it's a little bit of a discussion. It's not so obvious. And we will get into a little bit more. You know, there are some possibilities that you are extending natural Shabbos.
The Taz.
Right, so that the Taz is pretty big. But even beyond that, you know, it comes up in Olchus Nida, comes up in Olchus Kriyashma, all these have different applications, so we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but there is a possibility you are actually extending the day. So we'll try to see how that plays out a little bit. I know it was up first here. Okay, Sam?
Couldn't it be that possible that being the drasha that teaches us that you're not chayav from the Mohammed, that's going to show you what proves that you are being kaddish, because
why would I need the drasha? Why would I need the pasuk, right? It goes back to what we talked about in the first year, how it's very hard to know how much to learn out from a drasha, right? So, or a din d'rabbanan or a drasha, so everyone brings that as a raya for whatever they want, because if the drasha is the proof that this is the kavanas haTorah, or it's the proof that we need the drasha to say it, so right, so you can go back and forth with these proofs, point well taken. Yes?
Are there different levels of siyagim in the Torah? Like some are explicit in the Torah and some are just drasha?
Yeah, as we mentioned, very few of them, you know, except unless you want to say, for example, the Torah says a king shouldn't have too many wives because it will lead him into a bodhisattva. Maybe that's the most explicit the Torah gets in terms of connecting one to the other. Sorry?
Is there like the Lashon Hara?
Well, Lashon Hara, the Torah doesn't, happens to be the kajibol of a rav, as a trooper where he says Lashon Hara is the siyag for the issur of sinah. Which could be, but that's not the favorite from the Torah. Sorry?
Chavos Chaim says that
right, so they're clearly linked. Right, so all of these are subject to debate. Most of what Rav Yosef Engel brings in this essay is if you say, like for example, in this case, it's totally on two assumptions. Totally on the assumption that Tosefta Shabbos is Daraisa, which is debated, and it's totally on the assumption that that's what it's about, which is debated. So most of the examples are based on one understanding of the other in a Rishon. It's not necessarily so explicit. So, what difference does this make? How does this affect life? Again, the question of how holy you should feel during the time of this effort is very nice. That's probably not the most crucial issue, though. So, what difference does it make? So, it could affect a number of things. And we'll start with one that's a little bit less practical, but that gives us a little bit of a perspective on the issue. So, if you want to ask the question, does Yontif in this case fully descend when you bring in Yontif early? So that could affect positive elements of the day. So before we get to specific mitzvot, which we kind of announced the question before, how could that be the case? We'll see that itself is a little bit of a debate. But one question that's asked is the positive element that manifests itself as a mitzvah. What am I talking about? It's a prohibition to get married on Yontif. It's generally assumed that that's a prohibition in Torah. As we'll see, that's got a chance to see Tosfos and Ksubos that was on the list. That's definitely the working assumption of Tosfos and Ksubos about the dying of the days. That this is a real drasha from the pasuk. V'samachta b'chagecha, that's the Gemara Gaon Katan and Daf Tes. V'samachta b'chagecha, v'lo b'ishtecha. As an aside, if you're interested in Mar Makom, so the Yerushalmi learns that out from a very different place. You know where Yerushalmi learns that out from? From Laban. And Laban tells Yaakov, you want to marry Rachel after you marry Leah, so you can do that, but you have to wait. Not seven years. And sometimes you think, so it sounds like that he had to wait 7 more years to marry her. So no, he didn't have to wait 7 years, he had to work 7 more years. But he had to wait 7 days. Right, so Lavan tells him to wait an extra week because the Sheva Brachos of Rachel shouldn't overlap with the Sheva Brachos of Leah. Like,
fascinating question, since when did Lavan become such a common topic? And he's already. So that there's a whole discussion about, if you want to see an interesting discussion about this, the Torah Tzeniva has a sefer on the Siddur called Baruch Shemar. So in the first essay, he talks about Matovu. Who is the source of Matovu? Bilam, also not usually our Rebbe. So he talks about why is it we quote Bilam, why is it Yerushalmi learns in the beginning of Lava, what exactly is going on there. He has a whole lot of interesting words. Sorry? Which Gemara is this? Say it again? It's a little hard to hear.
Like with the two-year-olds that work at the same time.
Gemara Daf Gimel? Oh, yeah, that Be'ema Arvin was here. Be'ema Arvin is really then about two simchas at the same time. Right, so if you have two simchas at the same time. Right, so that's what it says. It ain't those who nash moe. That's the thing. So you would think, okay, I can't get married on Yom Kippur. I know that already, right? I can't get married on Shabbos. So for sure I can't get married on Yom Kippur. So the truth is, Shabbos is the Rabban. To not get married on Shabbos, we'll get to it hopefully, is a gzera of kinyan. You can't have a kinyanim on Shabbos. It's a gzera mishum kosev. That's the Rabban. But to get married on Chol Moed, and when you think of generally more kal than Shabbos, get married on Chol Moed is actually just a deraisa. So on a normal Shabbos, it's just a drabanan, and on Chol Moed, you could drive to the wedding, but it'll be just a deraisa to have the wedding. Why? Because it's a conflict, eim arvin simcha v'simcha v'simachta v'gecha v'lov v'ishma. So Tosus and Ksubis raises the question that the Gemara over there, Memzayin and Mebeis, gives you the impression that it's talking about somebody getting married on Yom Kippur. Not getting into the complexity of that discussion, but that's what it sounds like from the Gemara. Somebody got married, a father married off his daughter on Shabbos or Yom Kippur. So Tosus asks the question, said, did there actually be a deal? How could it be that if you get married during Shabbos or Yom Kippur, or at least during Yom Kippur, which seems to be more common than Esther Dereis? So Tosfos has two suggestions. One suggestion is, since the whole issue is Ein Arvin Simcha V'Simcha, so we all know, what's the real Simcha? Suda. So the Suda, okay, that they didn't have on Yom Kippur. They had the Suda before. So, okay, the real celebration of the wedding didn't take place on Yom Kippur. Just the technicality of getting married. That's one answer in Tosfos. But the other answer that we're more interested in, or we're interested in why the first answer is this one, is she got married with Man Tosefes. So we know we have two answers to Tosefes, and usually means that one answer doesn't agree with the other answer. It usually means that there's some machlokas within that. So apparently, one answer feels it's a viable option to get married during Tosefes Yom Kippur. Can't get married on Yom Kippur, but yes, you can during Tosefes. And the other answer says, no, Tosefes Yom Kippur, like Yom Kippur, you can't get married either time. And therefore, I'm not the famous. So what seems to be that issue? What's probably the pivot issue here, whether or not you can get married during a time of Tosefes?
Is Tosefes Yom
Kippur? Is Tosefes Yom Kippur what?
Is it Yom Kippur?
Right, if it is Yom Kippur, then what? Yeah, but why is it different? So I know I can't do malacha during Tosefes Shabbos. So what's different here? Sorry? Oh, so that seems to be the difference. I would understand that the malacha applies to the zone. The malacha prohibition can apply here as well. But here, the getting married prohibition is an interesting kind of prohibition. Because on the one hand, it phrases itself, it manifests itself as an issue. But what's creating the issue? It's a response to Simchas Yom Kippur. That's at a time when there's Simchas Yom Kippur, you can't dilute that Simchas Yom Kippur by having a wedding at the same time. So it seems to me the question is, when I bring in Yom Kippur early, I know that I can't do malacha during that time. But does the component of Simcha extend to that zone as well? If Yom Kippur has fully come in, so then it's Simchas Yom Kippur. And therefore, to get married is a spirit of Simchas Yom Kippur. While if it's not really Yom Kippur, I'm just abstaining from Malacha, so okay, I'll abstain from Malacha, but there's no Simchas Yom Kippur.
And therefore,
that's not going to contradict
the Pesachim by getting married during that time. That's the way many of the later scholars understand
is the setup within the two positions here in this Tosfos. And there are a lot of nuances to figure out here. There's a lot of other areas. Sam Sofer in his Chidushim to Ksubis, he notes that, for example, that sounds like from the Gemara of Sachman, the Fine Aleph, if you got to see it, that there isn't really a Chiyuv Simcha at night in the first night of Yantiv, which has to do with the Karbanos relationship and with a complex point. So therefore, maybe the idea is that the Ikar Simcha Samisuin is the day of. So then maybe we're encouraging the marriage to happen during the time of Tosefes, so that the day will be over by the time the next morning starts when there really is a Chiyuv Simcha. So that's there are nuances here which may push this into a different direction. But it seems on the surface, the simplest way of understanding things is that there is a machlokas within 2 days of Tosfos, whether or not there is Simchas Yontif during the time of Tosefes, and perhaps this really correlates to our broad question of what is Tosefes Yontif or not.
Yes. So even though Tosfos said this on two wills, can you say that you don't have to necessarily relate that idea to all the way to Tosefes, because you can say that he also saw the Yerushalmi, and that he knows that this would be Shabbat brought to that way, go into on Shabbos. That would be the Marvel at some point.
So the Shabbat brought to Joe, we not Machmer, do not have the Shabbat brought to overlap with the Yerushalmi's point, the way Marvel is the Shabbat brought is an interesting point, what ramifications that has. There we just get to see so that we can't let the two Simchas impact on each other. But halacha, we don't assume that if this would get married within the week before Yantif, that the Shabbat Brachas itself creates this deal, especially since halacha, we assume that Shabbat Brachas is a good Rabban, not a Zom Rabban. So, practically speaking, it's an interesting point, but that doesn't seem to play a role in this discussion. Okay, so, that's it.
Didn't they frequently, in Poland, have weddings Friday night to save money?
No, Friday afternoon. That's the difference. Yeah, so they used to, it was a frequent practice to have weddings on Friday afternoon, the idea being that the Suda would serve for both. And again, that's an interesting question by itself. You're saying the wedding didn't take place on Shabbos. But maybe what you're asking is, what about Tosfos' answer that we got to make the Suda separate? So that may be more of a problem for Yantif than it is for Shabbos. Because Shabbos, we don't have, presumably, maybe we'll try to find some time maybe to talk about this, to see how many non-malacha related topics we can squeeze in. But it's generally assumed by most Rishonim, not all, that there's no Simcha on Shabbos. Simcha is a Yantif idea rather than a Shabbos idea. Shabbos is about Oneg and Kavod. Yantif is about Simcha. And that's why it's assumed that there's no Issur D'oraisa Gemara on Shabbos. So to have a Suda on Shabbos double for both wouldn't necessarily pose an automatic problem according to that answer tells us.
If Tosefes for Yantif and Shabbos comes out of the paradigm of Kippur, it's so clear that there's Simcha by Kippur that then you can say that Tosefes for Shabbos and for Yantif, which are so similar, or even for Shabbos. There's no Simcha for one. How can you say that Tosefes is about separating between the Simcha and the Yantif?
I don't know if that has to bother us, although it's an interesting question. Stam, if it's true there's no Simcha in Kippur, we can talk about that maybe next week. It's an interesting question about Rosh Hashanah. We'll have time to speak there before Rosh Hashanah. But without necessarily granting the premise that there's no Simcha for Yom Kippur, I don't know if it has to match exactly in that sense that the same Midah or the same theme has to be invoked in order for it to extend. It could just mean that Tosefes is an extension of the whole day. And whatever comes along with the day, whether it's Inui, whether it's Simcha, whether it's Sister Chametz, whether it's whatever, comes along with it. It's harder for the Rambam, because once the Rambam starts distinguishing within the day, then you know that would be a problem, but he doesn't have to hold for this whole story. Okay, so fine. So just off the surface, so it seems to be that issue in that issue seems to reflect this concern in general. This two possibilities in Tosfos seems to reflect these two possibilities we've been talking about. This is a prominent issue as well
when it comes to Tosfos in the beginning of Arvei Pesachim. I don't think anyone Arvei Pesachim last year.
But this is a, you weren't even in NYU last year.
know why you learn Arab Pesach and Pesach. So those of you here, maybe on the last part, you had a chance to learn Arab Pesach. So this is really close to the very beginning of the 10th Parak. That raises this issue that's going to come up in a couple of different stages. So the question, the premise that we'll pick on Jonathan, because you said it before, that if you fulfill positive mitzvot during the time of Tosefes, so that's really an open question if that's true. So one of the most practical cases is, and we'll come back to discuss this in a little more detail, as you mentioned first, explaining in the context of Tosefes and Shabbat, is what about Suda Shabbos? And Suda Shabbos is a positive mitzvah, not about a mulam. Can one have his Suda Shabbos during the time of Tosefes? So he brings in Shabbos at 5 instead of 6, and he daven quickly enough, it's now 5:25, can he have his Suda during that time? So we'll talk about who was involved in that machlokes. But, and it's very relevant, the Achronim got involved in that machlokes because it's part of the whole train of the Shukasas, as we see, a whole train of consistent views. But that was the background of, and really my focus is Tosfos and Sofim on Daf Tzadik Hes and Beis. Because Tosfos over there at first, and he quotes a day that disagrees, but Tosfos at first assumes that it's no problem to have your Suda Shabbos during the time of Tosfos. And based on that, they ask a question on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Arvim Zachim, Samok Lamincha Loyotho Adam Ashikapsha, that a person shouldn't eat on Erev Pesach until dark. So it says, Tosfos, until dark? What do you mean until dark? I can't have my Seder until dark? Why can't I have my Seder before dark? Right, why can't I bring in Pesach early? It's a very practical issue, especially now that they've started changing the clock before Pesach now consistently. So the Seder is always slated to start late. There's always a fundamental tension because we're trying to keep the kids awake and we have to start the Seder late. So says Tosfos, I don't understand. We have Friday night dinner early when it's not dark outside. So the Seder, why can't they do that as well? That's it.
But the Seder is supposed to be just kind of nice or something.
Correct. That's what Tosfos basically says. And Tosfos essentially says, in a different formulation to this, that the issue is not about the time of Pesach, not a question of when Pesach starts, but it's a question of the mitzvah of Matzah. Other Rishonim focus on other elements, but Tosfos focuses, as the title of the literature explicitly tells us, that it's the mitzvah of Matzah that's the issue. That, in other words, you could have said, before Tosfos starts talking about it, you could have said, well, can I have my Seder during the time of Tosefes? Well, it depends. If it's really Pesach, then yes. If it's not, then no. It's not that we're just abstaining from Galata. Abstaining from coming, although that we're, this kicks in a few hours early anyway. But if it's just that we're abstaining from Galata and the light, so then not a time for the Seder. If it's really Pesach, then yes. So Tosfos essentially says, no, that's not the story. Because you have a mitzvah of matzah. Matzah has a hekesh to Korban Pesach. In the context of Korban Pesach, we're told that had to be done by Laila. So therefore, that's our problem. Because we be emotional, you want to have matzah for breakfast the next morning. So that's for sure Pesach according to everybody on every level. The next morning is Pesach. But it's not a fulfillment of matzah because it's not Pesach night. So we need not only Pesach, we need Pesach night. So that's what essentially Tosfos introduces into this discussion, that it could have been probably the solution. It could have been a question of whether it's actually Pesach or not, but because there is this requirement of night, now it's a little more complicated. So this, just parenthetically, on a practical halacha level, and so this tends to mean that we can't start our Seder early
for the purposes of at least matzah. Matzah is pretty early on. But maybe you might say, okay, but let me get kiddush at least. It takes me a few minutes to get some kiddush for matzah. So I should be marviach a few minutes there as well. So that doesn't seem to work either. Post it doesn't address as others address this. That it seems that not only do we have to have matzah during the time that it's vaday laila, but you also have to have kiddush during a time that is vaday laila. And why that is a whole discussion, Nick.
I've heard people like to certain kind of problems
later on. That's a good question whether that works as well, or how much you accomplish. You can certainly talk about the Haggadah then.
Like they go through the, I mean, like I heard maybe, like, I don't know exactly, but they go through like the, I'm assuming they stop right before like the finish part of
the, right, so there's no reason you can't talk about the Haggadah then. The question is in terms of the certain things you're still going to have to do, Keseder, such as the Dalet Kosos and the like, which are going to be harder. So that's a bigger issue. That even if you can have a degree of dark to call your matzah, so Kiddush is the first step, that's Kaddish, that's the first thing. And Kiddush apparently needs dark also. So why should that be? So it's interesting, it's a little bit different discussion. It could be that since Kiddush plays a dual role on Pesach night, it's both Kiddush and the first cup of the Dalet Kosos. So maybe the Dalet Kosos were nitzkan around the Seder, around the matzah, and and therefore the din of Lila applies to them as well. Some understand that to be the case. Or there is a fascinating comment to the Taz, which we'll leave the analysis for a different time. The Taz says it's actually an issue of Kiddush, the Muglim Suda, in the temporal sense, that normally we know Kiddush has to be in the same physical place as Suda. Here the Taz introducing Kiddush has to be in the same time zone as the Suda. So even though this is your Seder table, the same table you're going to have a meal in 15 minutes, but maybe it's not called Makom Suda if halachically it's too early for you to have the Suda, then maybe you can't have the Kiddush during a time when you cannot yet have the Suda, which is nothing finished for a different time. But it comes down to that not only do we have to wait till dark for matzah, we have to wait till dark for Kiddush as well, either because of Dalet Kosos reasons or because of Kiddush reasons, so we don't end up really saving much time.
According to that cause, can we say what we were suggesting the other day for the dishes of Arabians, making a kiddush for your wife when you go home, that would be another possible solution?
Well, except you'd have to have somebody who can have it then. You know, the Arabians is the fact that somebody needs you now, so that extends your view.
Balkor makes real kiddush.
Sorry?
Say that Balkor made a real kiddush.
But here, the problem is there's nobody who needs the kiddush earlier. Right, you don't have the kiddush, so that gets a little more complicated. So the halacha, the best you can really find, apart from the sefer on Zmanim, which you mentioned, that was his classic sefer for the little notes one. So the sefer is all about Zmanim. The most makel sheet you can find there is that if somebody in the Yevet made Kiddush Pesach night during Behash Shmashos, in the Yevet it's okay. The lachachila, even for Kiddush, you have to wait not only for Shnia, but for Tzeis. So you don't really find much grounds for Kula as far as this. That's what folks are starting on this whole discussion, that maybe as far as Tosefis is concerned, it could have worked, but external requirements such as Lila, Dalet Kosos, whatever it is, doesn't let us start much earlier. Now this din, the Ramah tells us, this is extended to Sukkot as well. That's part of why we said every other has got its quarter. So then we see Pesach is treated differently. So Sukkot's coming up. The Ramah says we shouldn't have our Suda on Sukkot night until dark. Why? Because Tesvav, Tesvav. Right, we have that drasha that links the two. And Chazal tell us, Zeir Shabbat, Tesvav, Tesvav, that Sukkot is the 15th of Tishrei, Pesach is the 15th of Nisan. That relationship tells us certain dinim are transferred. So therefore, the main thing that we're aware of from that relationship is, just like on Pesach, all of Pesach long, if we want to eat, we have to eat matzah instead of bread. But Pesach night, the first night, we have to eat matzah. We have to save it. So too, Sukkot, all Sukkot long, we don't have to eat. If we eat a meal, it should be in the Sukkah. But the first night of Sukkot is a mitzvah to eat in the Sukkah. So the Rav Ma says, not only does the relationship tell us about that mitzvah, but tells us it has to be during darkness as well. That, by the way, has major ramifications, I know, in my area the past year. We had a major conflict about what to do, because, let's say, the relevant time zone was around the time of 7 to 8. Seis was around 8 o'clock that time of year, the first night of Sukkot, and there was a prediction of major rain coming. And between 7 to 8, I checked on the internet, between 7 to 8, the chance of precipitation was 10%, and at 8 o'clock it went up to 90%. Right? So any other night of Sukkot, if it rains, it's okay, you're patur min ha-Sukkah. But we know the first night of Sukkot is much more complicated. First night is a chiyuv to have a suda in the Sukkah, and if it's raining, you end up having to wait it out. And that gets very complicated. So it was a trade-off. What do? Do we wait for the Ramah's Chumrah and risk the 90% chance of precipitation and then getting stuck? Or do we risk, or do we say no, that it's more of a tzad to not necessarily worry about that and worry more about the mitzvah of eating the Sukkah first night and make Kiddush earlier? So I personally thought there were many smartest who at least made Kiddush beforehand and continue the Suda into the dark, into the after 6:09. If the rain allows you to. I thought there was many spars to do that. I remember discussing the matter with Simon at the time, where he noted that even if one wants to be machmir for the Ramah, you don't have to necessarily hold a Motzi Shabbos seis. There's a lot of different definitions of what seis is. So Motzi Shabbos, we take a more stringent interpretation of what seis is. We could take a more lenient version of what seis is, which would have allowed for an earlier time. So there was a lot of makom to start a little bit earlier. So I advised my people to start the meal earlier, which I think was the right move because we needed 8 o'clock. So I warned a lot of people in my neighborhood ended up getting stuck until much, much later at night at best because of that situation. So that's the whole question, this relationship between what Tosfos here is saying, that not only are we mechuyev to eat our Seder Pesach night, but it has to be after dark. And the Ramah transferring that over and saying that that's true not only Pesach night, it's true Sukkot night as well. As soon as that's the tenet, so there's a lot of other applications that there, inshallah. One of the Gemara's fears for that is the fact that there is a Chiyuv to have the Suda. So he apparently, it's worth trying to figure out what he's getting at, but he apparently sees as part of the whole discussion that the Suda is not only mandatory, but it's obligatory within the family. There's more to say about it. Maybe tomorrow we'll try to say a little bit more about it. But that brings up a major issue. So Tosfos is one answer Tosfos has. And Tosfos asked this question, I saw Tosfos, and some other folks should definitely try to see it. That one answer Tosfos has is that Pesach is different because of the whole Lila thing. And the other answer Tosfos says is maybe it wasn't true, this whole issue that you're allowed to have your suda on the Shabbos earlier. Maybe Shabbos also you have to wait till dark. Maybe this was a mistake. So, essentially what comes out of Tosfos is general agreement among most Rishonim, not all, but most Rishonim, and certainly Rishonim that affect us halacha today, that Pesach night you have to wait until after dark. But Friday night, not on Friday night, that apparently is a machlokas to Deis and Tosfos, and comes out to be a machlokas between the Taz and the Maharshal. And this is part of a whole chain of at least three different Tazes, possibly more, which we'll have to look at a little bit more tomorrow. But three different times where we see the Taz arguing with the Maharshal exclusively these twice, maybe three times, about the nature of Tosefta Shabbos. Because according to the Maharshal, the Taz quotes, right, the Maharshal of Shlomo Luri was a contemporary of Shlomo Aruch. According to the Maharshal, Suda Shabbos has to happen after dark. Because, apparently, bringing Shabbos in early means that you don't do malacha, but it doesn't make it into Shabbos. And therefore, the Suda, you can't have it.
called the Taz. Taz disagrees. And the Taz is the one who's the prominent Afronim, and the earliest, who has this very explicit language where he says that it's not a problem. Because once you bring in Shabbos, since that's what the Torah tells you to do, it's a din and Torah to bring Shabbos in early, he says, Kfar Chalaf Hayom, the day has already transformed, it is now Shabbos, and therefore you can have your Suda during this time. So his language is very explicit like this. As I mentioned before, I mentioned there was Islam's objection. So he acknowledges that's what the Taz says, and says, still you have to assume the Taz means something less than that. The kedusha that's not a full-fledged kedusha. So that being the case, that this major debate between Shalom and Taz, we'll see tomorrow, plays itself out in a number of other debates that they have as well. Just to clarify, if one wanted to be matmir for the Marshal's view, so it wouldn't necessarily mean that you have kids at night, that you have to wait until then to make kiddush. One could theoretically still make kiddush early, still give his kids dinner, still get a lot of the advantages of starting Shabbos early. And the chumra would be to make sure to have a kezias of bread after it's fully done. So, b'yom hazeh, people who are machmir for the marshal, that's generally what it means. It doesn't mean that they keep their kids up until after days in order to make kiddush. It means that if they want to machmir to this view, to have a kezias of bread after it's fully dark. So I think it was Sammy Gil Jonathan, is that?
Yeah, just, did we mention somebody who says that since you can't have the Suda, therefore it's not Kiddush Gemara for the Suda?
Yeah, so the Taz, so that...
So then...
Right, so the question, the Taz by, Hilchos Pesach. Right, so first of all, the Marshal may or may not agree with that.
Right.
Or to be Machmir for this, you wouldn't necessarily have to sign on to that because it's a Kiddush. But I think especially there, it's because this hafkah, that the Mishnah say that the Suda of Pesach night is specifically not during that time, because if it didn't marry through it, then you're saying that they're really not sharing the same time zone. There's a couple of nuances to figure out about that, but that seems to be the most direct path. Bill, next.
Can I ask something along the same lines as Sam? Because if someone's machmir for the marshal, does he make ill against like that product?
No, I think just that he wouldn't accept that explanation. I think lahalacha, I don't think anyone...
Just accept.
There's a lot of different reasons to not make kiddush early that way. It doesn't necessarily have to transfer because Pesach again it's a hafka. To say the suta by its very nature can only be at dark is a whole different type of separation. That's your question also.
What about any lighting candles?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that not?
So no, we'll discuss that tomorrow a little bit. Why that's in a different category. And there's a big elephant in the room that we haven't discussed yet that we'll save for the end. You'll see also you can ask a more powerful question, but we'll come to that tomorrow. But also another point, discussing this once with the Moshe staff, Karen Biavin, who pointed out that it is possible to say that you believe it's not really Shabbos and still make a case that you can have Suda Shabbos beforehand, Suda Shabbos during that time. Which is interesting. It just happens to parallel the whole eating on Erev Yom Kippur question. So again, to borrow from that discussion now, we mentioned one view, or we just came up tangentially, that one view in why you eat on Erev Yom Kippur is to prepare for the fast. There's another whole view on Rishon, that the reason you eat on Erev Yom Kippur is a different idea. That really, as Tuki was asking before, that Yom Kippur doesn't seem to have a bit of a symptom. I mentioned that there are those who say it does have a bit of a symptom. For example, say the UA holds that Yom Kippur does have a mitzvah of simcha, and therefore that's why maybe you have a suda on Erev Yom Kippur. That really there's a chiyuv suda on Yom Kippur. But we have this technical issue that there's a chiyuv of courage to eat it, so we can't actually have our suda on Yom Kippur, so we have to push it off. So perhaps the eating on Erev Yom Kippur is the suda of Yom Kippur that we can't have on Yom Kippur itself. So how is it a help if it's not on the day itself? Apparently, having a Suda close to Yom Kippur in honor of Yom Kippur suffices to be Suda's Yom Kippur, like we see by other things also, like the Tos was talking about the Tos of the Suda's about the marriage. You can have a Suda in honor of something, it's not necessarily completely at the same time. So too, one could make a case to say, listen, it's not Kiddush
Shabbos hasn't started yet. But we might still say that the Chiyuv Suda Shabbos doesn't necessarily have to be on actual Shabbos. That maybe having a Suda on a Friday afternoon, on a time when I've already decided to welcome in Shabbos, even though Kedusha Shabbos hasn't entered, maybe that still could be a time for Suda Shabbos. So just a ha'ara, that it might still be a way to say that you can have Shabbos Suda early and not necessarily sign on to a full-blown Kedusha Shabbos view. But on the surface, it seems to break down this way, that if you believe it is Shabbos, so then you can have your Suda, that's the view the Talmud expresses. While if you believe you're just abstaining from Halacha, it seems like it's not yet a time for Suda Shabbos, and that would line up with the Maharshal. Again, this is 2 days in Tosfos, with Tosfos then saying, if you believe you can, we have to explain why Pesach is different, which they then go on to. Yeah.
Would you have to make another Kiddush after Shabbos?
No, so Kiddush itself, that's the elf in the room that I was getting at. We'll see Kiddush has its own whole story, we'll try to get to that tomorrow. But essentially, just let's go quickly recap what we spoke about. So we spoke about the fact that there is an obligation of Tosefis derived from the Pasuk that the Torah is saying you should fast on the ninth, which is also a marker for the obligation of eating. On Erev and Kippur, we talked about how they might clash with each other, and the assumption that they're both are Isa. Although that assumption, in the case of Tosef Shabbos, was a machlokus Rishonim. Most Rishonim say Tosef Shabbos and Yantif are Isa from that. Actually, it's not really a machlokus, because everyone agrees that if they clash, it's Uzar Isa. Everyone agrees that eating and fasting and Erev and Kippur, Tosef is their Isa. Only question is, it's extended to Tosef Shabbos and Yantif. That is machlokus. The Rambam understands only Tosefes Inui by the Kippur to be a Daraisa. The Torah sees Tosefes and Kippur as a whole as Daraisa. And whether or not the Rambam acknowledges Tosefes Shabbos Midrabbanan, that's the Shabbos of the Achronim, and that was the view also of the Vayim Tam quoted by the Or Zarua. So we prompted the question, what are we accomplishing with Tosefes? Are we actually making Kedusha, what we call the ambitious school? And we said, that's the reason we understand what it's about. It's about expressing our desire to bring actively, or are we pretending, which is a harder idea to understand, but the Medrash and Mike together suggest that this is a theme of Siyag, which makes sense for sure according to the Rambam, but even if it's a Daraisa, it could also make sense, because as Joseph Engel showed the world, there is ample precedent to believe that there is such a concept as a Siyag and HaTorah. So then they prompted the question, so what exactly is the difference? So one difference could be the question of whether the theme such as Simchas Yontif extend into the time of Tosefes. Seems to be a machlokus 2 days opposed to the Simchas Daphne Zayin, which asked if the Isser of getting married could apply to Zman Tosefes as well, of they married the Simcha the Simcha. And then we saw Tosus and Psachim, which has 2 days about whether you can have Suda Shabbos during the time of Tosefes. And the question is, if you can, so why is it that the Mishnah seems to be saying you can't start your Seder then? So the answer the Rishonim give, that Matzah is different than Matzah requires Lila, then other than bringing in also the Galatosis require Lila, which could explain why even Kiddush can't do before a time of Tosefes. And then we mentioned the positive question about that as well, in terms of Kiddush Malka Suda. And then we said this excellent question of Suda Shabbos was actually my focus later on between the Taz and the Maharshal, which seems to correlate to these issues and seems to also be a part of a continuing feud between the Taz and the Maharshal, as we will see that feud continuing, God willing, tomorrow morning, early this year, and the 11 o'clock here. The station has a fantastic